Hey, and welcome to episode number 9 of the Career HQ podcast. Today we have kind of an interesting guest. He's my former boss at Animals and current business partner at Superpath, Walter Chen. To say he's had an interesting career would be an understatement. Walter became a lawyer, didn't love that world, and has since started a number of different businesses. Animals is probably the best known one. He's helping me with Superpath, is also launching another business right now. We get into all of that, but there's an interesting through line through all of the businesses that he started, and that's content marketing. And so we'll talk a lot about that, why content marketing is such an important skill, why it's so great for helping companies grow, and we'll dive into all the details of that. I think you'll really enjoy it. One quick thing before we dive into this episode is Superpath Pro, which is now a real thing. You can check it out at pro.superpath.co. Of course, there's a link on the site. And what it is a professional development membership for content marketers. So for $50 a month, you get access to our courses, which we actually have a couple up right now, and we'll be releasing more as we go. Obviously, you also get access to the entire backlog, regardless of when you join. We also are going to be doing monthly one-on-ones where we'll pair you up with a peer and provide an agenda for a structured conversation around different themes. So themes might be writing, career growth, content strategy, editing, etc. And then we're also going to be having office hours where we'll bring in expert marketing operators and make them available for questions. Obviously, we'll record those things. You'll get access to all of it. It's pretty cool. We already have a number of awesome people in there, which is really exciting. You can, like I said, go learn more, pro.superpath.co. Hope to see you there and hope you enjoy this episode. Take care. Hey, Walter, how's it going?
Good.
Is this the first time you've ever been on a podcast?
No, I've been on podcasts before. Don't insult me. Come on.
You're under the radar, man.
Yeah. You know, people invite me on podcasts. I try to send them to someone who would be better on the podcast. You know, in a normal case, it might be, oh, hey, you want to like come on my podcast and talk about content? I'd be like, you should talk to Jimmy. Get Jimmy on your podcast. So yeah, I try to get other folks on them. But you know, in this case, there is no other Jimmy to pawn it off on.
So you're stuck. Well, cool, man. Well, I appreciate you doing this. I mean, the goal of like just this podcast in general is to talk about people's careers. I think you've had a very interesting career as a lawyer and then an entrepreneur. Content has been kind of like the core thing of what you've done going back to like, I done this or maybe even before that. So hoping to talk about all that stuff. Maybe we start with being a lawyer. So you went to law school, you went to University of Michigan Law School, moved back to New York, became a lawyer. Then what happened?
Yeah. Growing up, you know, my dad is a math professor. I did a lot of math. I like, you know, learned how to code from a young age. So I did computer science in college, but I always liked to read and write. And also computer science, you know, involves writing code. So it's actually very similar to writing. I mean, there are a lot of, not very similar. There's different forms of writing, obviously, but it's like not too dissimilar from legal writing in a sense. So anyway, I thought, no, I don't really want to be a software developer or go to grad school for math or computer science. So I was like, oh yeah, I like to read and write. So, and then, you know, I was thinking about law and I was like, oh, you know, it has legal reasoning, you know, it's got logical reasoning, you know, there's a lot of overlap and I just wanted to do something different. So I had the fortune of being able to go to law school. So then I went to Michigan. That was great. And I worked for a judge the year after I graduated. And that was actually probably still the best working experience of my life. So I thought, oh yeah, I'll be a lawyer and it's going to be good. And then I went to go practice law in New York City, a corporate law firm. And it was like during the financial crisis. So it was kind of, it was interesting. I worked on the Lehman bankruptcy and stuff like that. But at the same time too, it was, I don't know, I wasn't too excited about it. So I quit my job. But yeah, I was just talking with emailing with a partner there because I met who is my now wife, Kathy. She was a paralegal.
Oh yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. She was a paralegal at the law firm. And Animals, our lawyer, Luke, he was another associate at the law firm.
Oh, interesting.
Now he's a partner at a different law firm. And then another associate who started on the same day as me. Oh, actually, no, he didn't start on the same day as me. He started later on. He's an investor in my new company. So the law firm has given me a lot.
Yeah, I didn't know all of that. That's cool.
Yeah. It was just 1 year, but yeah, it was a lot of stuff.
And so since then, you've started a series of businesses. You've started at least 4 that I can think of. Is that it? Or are there more?
I think, well, this is the third kind of like official company, but yeah, there were other failed attempts that we don't talk about.
Oh, I see. Okay. I was counting those. Maybe we jump to I Done This, which is where you and I that was how we first got to know each other a little bit. So you start this company, I Done This. It's productivity software app, and we started in 2011, 2012?
Yeah, we started in 2011. Well, we started actually launched it at the very beginning of 2011. Yeah, 2011. It was like a New Year's Day kind of thing. It'd be like, hey, you know, here's a way to keep your New Year's resolutions with, I done this, we built this thing. It'll email you every day and ask you what you did, and then you just respond. And so, yeah, that was like in the beginning of 2011.
That's cool. And I done this caught my attention, one, because I was working for a small SaaS startup and it was remote and we needed a way to see what everybody was doing. And so we started using iDoneThis for that. And then I started paying attention to the blog. So I guess I went in the opposite direction you're supposed to go.
Right.
But I was studying it because as a content marketer, I was just curious like what other folks are doing. And I was always really impressed with the content that iDoneThis did. And, you know, later on getting to know you and learning more about the work that you all did, the blog became kind of a big deal. I mean, it drove a ton of traffic and a ton of signups to iDoneThis.
Yeah. We ended up getting like, I don't know, 250,000 signups. And a lot of it was driven by, I mean, it was almost entirely driven by content. Yeah. And that's how we ended up growing the business. But yeah, just started off with, you know, writing blog posts here and there, and people really liked them. I mean, the bar is a lot higher now, so you don't try this today. But we, you know, we just wrote some, you know, blog posts. People really liked them. And then we built out a content team. You know, first we had Janet, who's now running content at Clearbit, and then Blake, who's now at Atlassian. So we were also able to hire great content people. But there was kind of like this rise in productivity conversations. You know, Lifehacker was really big. The Buffer blog was really big on productivity. And so we were kind of riding a lot of that wave too, talking about productivity. So yeah, that was our angle.
And you guys wrote every single day. Is that right?
We tried. Yeah. Later on with Blake, later on, his like thing was to publish every single day. So yeah, he did publish every day. Early on, we were pretty uneven. Janet was more, less on quantity, more on quality, to the extent right. There's a trade-off there. But yeah, we tried to publish several times a week.
Got it. Okay. So iDoneThis, eventually you sell the company and you start Animals. This is like probably mid 2015, roughly.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, like, what was it about running a B2B SaaS company and doing content marketing that made you want to start a content marketing agency?
Yeah, it's a good question. I kind of felt like, you know, a lot of people started asking me if I could help them with content. And I thought I had a perspective on content, and I felt like a lot of content sucked. So that was kind of like the mission, which was like to bring better content into the world. So that's what kind of inspired it and got the ball rolling. I had a sense of, I didn't necessarily think I was going to build an agency. I remember a conversation I had early on with Heaton Shaw, where I was like, oh yeah, you know, we're doing content. And he was like, it's an agency, just call it an agency. And I didn't do that. But yeah, I had the idea that, oh, maybe it would be, you know, we could build some software and we could scale in different ways. But yeah, so it had a slightly different concept when we first started, but yeah, it became, you know, content marketing agency.
Yeah. I find you interesting because maybe also just for like, for transparency, like I worked at Animals for a long time. We are now, we're now business partners in Superpath. Maybe people don't realize that. I find you interesting because I would consider you probably one of the most important people in content marketing. And the reason I was joking earlier that you're under the radar is because you don't look and act like most content marketers. Like, you're not constantly out there like giving keynote speeches at Content Marketing World and that kind of thing. But you built this agency, which serves, you know, currently dozens of SaaS companies, and over the years has served probably 100 or more SaaS companies. And a lot of the stuff that people read out there actually came from Animals. You don't know it because they're clients, and we have NDAs and we ghostwrite and whatever. How do you think about that? Like, you know, you've been really influential in this world, but have always kind of been kind of reluctant to take the spotlight. You know, you prefer, kind of like you said, to hand that off to other people. Is that just your personality, or is that like a deliberate strategy?
Yeah, I think, well, you know, I think it's a mix. But one, I thought there was more, you know, there are a lot of content agencies that are driven by personality and individuals being well known and, you know, in personal brand and stuff like that. I thought long term that wasn't really what I wanted, because it ties you to the company, and the company becomes more valuable when it's not tied to any single person. And I think that was one of the really powerful things that we were able to do, is lift up Animals as a company, individuals within that company, give them a platform. But through that, it shows the people there that there's always opportunity to go up. And so, like, for example, Jimmy, you now started Superpath. We got Ryan doing your job and better, you know. No, I'm just kidding. But no, you know,
it's true.
We got other people coming up. So I feel like that's the company as kind of a platform is the kind of the powerful concept that kind of inspires me and is what we tried to make happen.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even know if you remember this, but when you were first getting, I don't even think Animals was real yet. And you and I had a conversation and you said, hey, are you interested in coming to work at Animals? This thing hasn't even started yet. And I was like, I don't know, maybe. And you were like, well, you have to move to New York. And I was like, no, I don't want to do that. And then we reconnected 8 months later or so. And Animals was starting to become remote. And you pitched me on a couple things. The first was that Animals was doing it the hard way, but doing it the right way. Like it was not some marketplace to connect companies to freelancers. Mm. Like there was no secret sauce. It was just like content's really hard and we're doing it that way because like quality is that's it. That's all that matters. I liked that. And the other thing you pitched me on was you thought that content was one of the best skills that you could have to build a career. And
right.
Even though I had worked in content at that point for a while, it never really occurred to me that I could be anything more than a content creator. Mm. And you're really the first person that said, why couldn't you be an executive? Why couldn't you use this skill to go start your own company one day? And I feel like it's real. It happened. Like it wasn't, wasn't just like a pipe dream that became
right,
real.
Right, right.
And it's, I feel like what you mentioned about people and animals, like having the opportunity to grow, to do lots of other things in the content world, like hiring and managing people and leading marketing and all these other things, like it's kind of powerful. Like I find it to be very motivating, but I'm curious, like, how did you develop this? Like, where, what made you realize like, wow, content is actually a skill that creates quite a bit of leverage for someone's career?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, around the time we were starting, I'd done this, there were a lot of companies that were taking off with doing a kind of particular brand of content. You know, I kind of lump like Buffer together with like Help Scout. So like Leo and Joel at Buffer and Greg at Help Scout. The Buffer guys, especially because we went to AngelPad with them. And so we sat next to them and got to know them pretty well. One of the things I saw with them is that great content guys, also entrepreneurs, and a lot of how they, you know, it kind of fits in with this, you know, Amazon has this whole thing about writing the press release first.
Yeah.
And one of the things you do when you write the press release first is you think about it from the customer perspective, you know, it puts you in the customer's shoes and makes you really think, what is the value prop? What is about this that's interesting and compelling, et cetera. And a lot of it is about narrative. You know, what is the story behind the product? And that narrative exercise is one where it's like very similar across content and starting companies and building product and investing and all that. It's like, what is the story here? What are the counter narratives? You know, how do you synthesize all this together? And so, you know, when I looked at Leo and Joel, I was like, wow, these guys are really good at content, but they don't limit themselves to content. And I feel like that's the kind of thing, which is a lot of times when you talk to content people, they either limit themselves to doing content or marketing or like building a personal brand or, you know, or even in entrepreneurship, it's all like digital education stuff, you know, digital products, like education products, not, you know, Superpath's doing some of that, but there's no reason that has to be the case, you know? And I look at like Heaton Shaw, for example. I mentioned Heaton. A lot of people forget he started off being sort of like an SEO person. He was like an SEO guy.
Right.
And I saw multiple iterations of this from, you know, being fortunate enough to work closely with Heaton on some things. He kind of went from being an SEO guy to being kind of like a growth guy to then being more of a product guy. But all along, he was an entrepreneur and a founder. And the sort of like SEO to growth, the product is like increasing leverage. And I think increasing kind of like more kind of like high-end positioning in some sense.
Right.
But yeah, throughout, he was an entrepreneur. So Heaton is a guy that you would say, if I had an SEO question, I mean, I could go ask him. I wouldn't, but you know, I would say that he's a guy that like knows all this stuff really well, but wouldn't limit himself to or pigeonhole himself in that way. So,
yeah. So
that's kind of how I see things. So, you know, when I think of like content as a skill, it's like kind of like your skill set versus like your identity. You know, I don't really think of myself as a content marketer per se, but I feel like content is a really important skill and really something that's really valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you going to write more? You know, like I'm asking because I wish you would.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
But now you're raising the bar too high. Now you're setting too high expectations. I can't meet them.
Who else has been influential to you like in your own career? I mean, it sounds like Heaton is one. Are there other folks, whether they're kind of in the content or marketing space or not?
Yeah, yeah. Chris Savage is a big one. from CEO of Wistia. You know, I got to know him and early on when we were doing I'd Done This, and he was an investor and advisor and I'd Done This, and then kept working together in different things. And the main thing I learned from Chris is he always had a very long-term orientation, and being able to think, I was just talking with someone about this today, being able to think long-term is, it can be a huge competitive advantage. So that was like one of the main things. And I'm obviously they've been doing Wistia for now, like over 13 years or something like that.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I assume that there's been opportunities for them to not continue running Wistia and walk away with probably a bunch of money.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think the long-term orientation, so working closely with Chris, that's been a big one. And then, you know, the ones of the people working at Animals, and so you, for example, have learned a lot from working with you, Devin, who's now running Animals, Haley, there are all these people who are ahead of you, you know, like Heaton and Chris, and there are people who are like alongside you. So I would say like people like Brian Wang, you know, and who's run photography and guys that I kind of started out with. And then there are people who you work really closely with, you know, and maybe, you know, like you and I have, and like me and Devin and Haley have. So you learn something, you know, from each of those people. And I think like those relationships have been incredibly valuable and instrumental. So
you recently, I mean, you were the CEO of Animals for 5 years, and then you stepped away from that role and promoted Devin into that role. Was it hard? Was that hard to do?
You were there.
Yeah.
It was hard. Yeah. I mean, and you saw it firsthand, you know, all the screaming and yelling. No, I'm kidding. I was only partially kidding. It's hard on a number of different fronts. I think long-term I feel really good about it. And it's definitely, at least in the last, you know, three months-ish, it's been going really well. And yeah, I think the challenge was in promoting someone, it's like you're having them run it. I didn't really want to run it, but there were hangups I had, you know, about having other people run it. So those things had to be worked through, and trust and all that. And we're still working through, you know, a lot of those things. But I think the thing that kind of illuminated it for me was like, I'd already sold a company before, so I'd already done that. So I wanted to try something different. And in selling I'd Done This, one of the things I saw was how resilient recurring revenue was. And so I thought I'd Done This would just crash, but it didn't. It kept going. It still exists.
Still going, yeah.
Yeah. And people still pay for it. So I thought, well, if I could find the right person to run this business and they could actually grow it, we could do that together. One, it would kind of give me a new experience. There's an opportunity to lift someone else up. And then the other is that I could make more money and have more income streams and compound more income. One of the things that Chris, you know, in talking with Chris about selling companies is that once you sell the company, you have a chunk of money and then it becomes, and then you kind of go into defensive mode. You know, you're like, oh, I don't want to lose this money that I have. Hmm. Whereas, you know, if you have income streams, recurring, you know, different forms of income and cash flow, then it could potentially allow you to take more risks and stuff like that and not be so fearful. So I don't know if I found that to be true yet, but because I am kind of fearful about Animals. But I mean, Devin and Haley right now are growing the business better than I was previously. So I think they're doing an amazing job.
Yeah. I mean, I have just like enormous amount of respect for Devin and Haley. And Devin was on the podcast previously. Haley's going to be on next week.
Oh, nice.
One of the things that Devin and I talked about was when we first formed like our formal leadership team, we all went to New York and had this, like our first offsite. And we went through an exercise where you asked each of us, what do you want to be like, you know, where are you in 5 years? What are you going to be doing in 5 years?
Yeah.
And it's kind of amazing actually that the things that we each said are actually coming true. Mm. Devin's answer, and I feel like I can say this because we already talked about it on the podcast. She said, I want your job.
Right.
What I told her was like, I was like really impressed by that answer. Like it was like, wow, that's a bold statement to make, but she meant it. She was genuine about it. And the thing that I appreciated about your reaction to it was that you weren't scared off by that. Mm. You know what I mean? Like when you say you want to elevate other people, it's not, you're not paying lip service to some kind of like phony company culture thing. Like you actually meant that. And then 2.5 years later, it became reality.
Yeah. That's cool. No, I appreciate you saying that. Yeah. I mean, it's not some kind, I'm making money, you know, so it's not some kind of a do-gooder. I'm definitely no do-gooder. I think everyone who knows me knows I'm not a do-gooder at all. So it makes me sound like I'm a do-gooder. I'm not making money, but that's right. But I felt that, you know, so like, what are the fun parts of this, you know, starting companies or whatever? I think some of the fun parts are winning, you know, winning, making money. But then the other parts I think are the helping other people win part. And I would say that you know, helping promote people, helping people, seeing people make more money, seeing people like have the job that they want and get excited about what they're doing, making investors money, I think is good. I would kind of bundle all of that into sort of like the camaraderie and that piece, which I feel like is important. And I lose sight of that all the time, but that, yeah, it's like the relationships and what you're going through together and all that makes it worthwhile. So
yeah. I want to be respectful of your time. I know you got a lot going on. Can you talk about what you're doing now? Like what is a day in the life look like?
Yeah. So Jan, who was the like third employee at Animals, Jan and I started another company, and it was based off of this relationship we had with Carta, which is a cap table management company that we developed at Animals. And Carta is launching this thing called Carta X, which is meant to be sort of like a way for late stage pre-IPO companies to create their own stock market in a sense, where their employees can sell shares to institutional investors. But as part of that, they wanted to create a whole ecosystem around research on these companies that they kind of like list in the same way that exists in the public markets. So we were talking with them about it and we're like, oh, we might be interested in building this company. And so we had a lot of conversation with their team and yeah, they decided to fund us. And then we went out and raised like $1 million, which we closed like a month ago. So yeah, to build this company, Sacra, which we're calling like a research and data platform for like late stage venture capital. So yeah, we're working on that. And we've been talking to a lot of people because we have no idea what we're doing. So because we're like, there's a whole universe of stuff that's happening here that existed, but like before we got here. So we've been spending a lot of time talking to people. Jan has been creating, we've bucketed things into two categories. One is like content and the other is like research. Research is the stuff where it maybe has something proprietary and we sell it to investors. Content is more like derivative forms of research that we give away for free to market the research. And the reason why we have to split it up is because we're always either talking about content or research. So if we just call it all content, it's very confusing. So there is a heavy content element, you know, in the same way that kind of like media is content. It's like, it's a question of like, what are you selling? What are you giving away for free? Who's your customer? Like, how are you thinking about monetizing and all this stuff? But yeah, so Jan has been working a lot on the research. And then I've been sort of talking with a lot of people, giving feedback on the research, like trying to get the research to market, which we're hoping to launch next week. So
awesome.
It's been fun. Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
That's cool. I'll make sure to link to that, obviously. And where can people find you? At Smalter?
Yeah. Twitter. Smalter. On Twitter and yeah, find us on sacra.com.
Cool. Awesome, man. I appreciate it. I know you got a lot going on, so I appreciate the time.
No. Nothing too important. Yeah. Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate you, asking me questions and taking interest.
For sure, man. That's what podcasting's all about.
Yeah. Cool.
Awesome. Thanks, Walter. Take care, man.
Yep. See you.